This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I would say that I'm happy to talk about something a little different other than cleaning, but unfortunately what I have to talk about is not all that much fun. But I do want to start with a story, Howard, that we've been trying to squeeze in for the last week or so, just haven't had a chance to talk about it. So I'm just adding it as a snippet this morning. And of course, that's a story about CyberArk having been acquired by Palo Alto Networks for $25 billion. Now, that is the second largest ever acquisition of an Israeli company, which comes after Google acquired Wiz earlier this year for $32 billion. So this is now CyberArk, which is selling out for $25 billion. And it's interesting that Israel was once upon a time kind of framed as the startup nation. And the term that's being used now for Israeli companies rather than startup is scale up. Which means that once upon a time, it was quite common for Israeli companies to develop some new technology, something really off the wall, and sell it relatively cheaply without actually developing it. These days, we have the luxury to be able not to come up with new ideas, but indeed to scale them up, and hence the term scale-up nation. And this is evident by the sales of these two huge companies for more than $20 billion each, $25 billion and $32 billion coming in for Israeli companies, and shows that we're, I think, graduating a little bit. We're developing to be able to take our ideas, develop them, really push them out there, create massive companies, and then potentially sell them off, or maybe not. But this is a great
incredible
story.
Absolutely.
And it really does show Israel as being at the forefront of identity security and generally the cybersecurity world.
And I think that one of the dangers, one of the bigger dangers of the war, is that it's narrowed the focus, Israel's focus and perception around the world, because all we seem to talk about, for good reason, is what is happening in the region. But when we look at what is still happening technologically and in the economy, we see it from a very different lens. And that's why I think it is important to remember that all of this is still happening, even in the midst of a war. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave two press conferences yesterday, and that was to try and outline his plan to conquer Gaza. What do we learn? What did we learn from all of this?
Right. So if we kind of backtrack to Thursday of last week, which seems such a long time ago now, we had this discussion about the fact that the Prime Minister was having disagreements within his cabinet, with the Chief of General Staff of the Army, within the senior ranks of the Army, lots and lots of disagreements about what the next step should be with regard to what's happening in Gaza. And I mentioned that the Prime Minister had spoken about the occupation, which I very much disliked as a term, and I thought that it was inappropriate. Interestingly, the Prime Minister on Friday tried to distance himself from that by tweeting that this is not an occupation. So having originally said that this was going to be an occupation of Gaza, he then went back on that and said, this is definitely not an occupation. And of course, we eventually had the cabinet meeting that took place into the early hours of Friday morning, where eventually it was decided that we would escalate the war in Gaza rather than try to get back to the negotiating table, although there wasn't really any prospect of returning to the negotiating table. We recall that the Americans, and in particular Steve Witkoff, was so he was really I think, frustrated and annoyed because the way that he presented things after the previous time when we thought we were on the verge of coming to some sort of an agreement, it was, I think, Steve Witkoff who said, we were on the verge of coming to an agreement until Macron decided to recognize a Palestinian state. That was what Steve Witkoff said, and he thought that Macron's announcement that he would recognize a Palestinian state was really the thing that threw the whole negotiation off course. I'm not sure that that was really the only reason why it all failed. But the point is that by the time we got to Thursday night at the Security Cabinet, there weren't that many options available. Option one, keep doing what we're doing now, more of the same, in and out, attacking sporadically, trying to engineer a situation which may bring us back to the negotiating table. That was the way that Chief of General Staff Eyal Zamir presented his plan. The Prime Minister said, that's not enough for me. I don't think that this is working. We need to change something. And eventually, late on Thursday night, it was decided that the plan, the Gaza plan, would be implemented. There would be an escalation of the military activity in Gaza. And essentially what that means is that we are going to be focusing more now militarily on areas that the IDF hasn't really reached until now for one reason or another. I think one of the main reasons why the IDF has left 25% of Gaza still relatively untouched by the IDF is because we believe that that's probably where our hostages are being kept. And if we choose to go in and attack that area, we fear that it might risk the lives of our hostages. Now, of course, that fact is not lost on the hostage families and the Hostage Families Forum, which came out very, very vocally on Friday, opposing the Prime Minister's plan and opposing the decision of the Security Cabinet to expand the operation in Gaza, because, of course, they fear quite justifiably that their loved ones may well be at risk, at more risk, as a result of this expansion of the plan. And in fact, the Gaza Hostage Family Forum has called for a general strike of the Israeli economy, which is being quite widely supported by many participants in the economy. And there is a very good chance that there will be a general strike in Israel, which is being called for by the Gaza Family Forum because of the decision made by the Prime Minister. So what the Prime Minister clearly understood on Friday and yesterday was that he hasn't been communicating things particularly effectively. First of all, calling this an occupation, then immediately backtracking and saying, no, this is not an occupation. It is simply conquering Gaza and defeating Hamas. But yesterday, he gave two press conferences, one in English and one in Hebrew. And for those who are really interested in hearing more detail, I do encourage you to download the video and to watch it. It comes with props and slides and maps and pictures and all of the things that you would expect Prime Minister Netanyahu to come up with. But I think for me, the one slide which said more than anything else, of course, there was a lot of emotive language and also pictures of our hostages, which is very emotive. And I don't particularly like, but I can understand why it's being used. But the one slide for me had five principles about what the Prime Minister wishes to do before the war in Gaza ends. That's the way that he presented it. And I'd like to just go through the five principles very quickly. The first one is Hamas is disarmed. I think that that's an interesting slight take on defeating Hamas. This is not defeating Hamas. This is disarming Hamas.
I didn't pick up the nuance.
Okay, so Hamas disarmed rather than defeated. Then he went on to say all hostages freed. I get that. I think there's no argument about that. He then goes to sort of repeat almost point one, which is Gaza demilitarized. I'm not quite sure how that's different from Hamas disarmed, but maybe I'm missing a little sensitivity somewhere. Then he writes to...
Could it possibly include Islamic Palestinian Islamic Jihad and all of the other terror organizations active in the region?
I'm almost sure that that is true. And I just wonder to what extent that's not really part of Hamas disarmed. I mean, obviously, Hamas is the forefront. Mm. It's the headline. But I think that all of these terror organizations will need to be disarmed. And so maybe that's where Gaza demilitarized really comes in. Then he put the fourth point down as being Israel overriding security control. And that's very, very cautiously worded. Overriding security control. I'm not quite sure what overriding means and why we couldn't just have Israel security control. There's a nuance in the overriding, which I've kind of not well understood. Mm. But the fifth point, and I think maybe the most important of all of them in terms of the future, is non-Israeli peaceful civil administration. And the non-Israeli is a very important addition here, because that says no occupation of Gaza. That's what that says. Israel does not want to have any future civil responsibility over Gaza and over the people of Gaza. However, until we reach that moment, and when Israel goes in to expand its activities and to potentially take over the remaining 25% of Gaza, inevitably civilians are there, because what we're seeing now is that the 75% of Gaza that Israel currently has control over is relatively free of civilians. The civilians are really all squashed into the remaining 25%, which is focused mostly around Gaza City and some of the other central camps in Gaza. And that's where the IDF apparently will begin their operations relatively soon. We understand that a reserve forces will be called up in large numbers in the coming days and weeks in order to beef up and to staff up for those operations. And then there will be the necessity to deal with the civilians in Gaza who will be inevitably be caught up in the next layer of the Gaza operation. Now, I think I get a lot of what is intended, which is free our hostages, conquer Gaza, conquer Hamas, for once and for all, disarm them, get rid of them, make sure that they're not part of the future peaceful civil administration, and also that Israel is not part of the future peaceful civil administration. I think that there are a lot of nuances and a lot of objectives to be achieved until we can get there.
The other factor is that one of the criticisms of Netanyahu and his government is that they haven't articulated what it will all look like. And that's why there's this enormous, one of the reasons that there's this enormous frustration. These points could have been made many, many months ago, even over a year ago, and perhaps with a different result, which leads us obviously onto our second point, which is the international opposition to Gaza in general and Israel's plan and actions in that region.
Yeah, so the international community have responded almost unanimously in opposition to the plan in Gaza. And I should also add, not only internationally, that both from the left wing and the right wing within Israel, there is opposition to the plan to expand the Gaza operation. But let's have a look at what's going on internationally. Some really crazy things. On the one hand, in the UK, the government has come out criticizing this expansion of the Gaza operation. And yet what we've seen in the UK over the last few days on the streets of London has been kind of the opposite. What we saw is a huge anti-Israel demonstration where the police became very, very involved and arrested something like 400 people who were involved in that demonstration, which is, I think, the largest number of people who've been arrested in any demonstration in the UK in a very, very long time. So those people were arrested. And then after that, yesterday, a massive pro-Israel demonstration, which went off quite peacefully and had protection of the police. So we're seeing that the streets of London are somehow being rejigged a little bit to show a little bit more support for Israel. In Germany, the German government came out right away to say, not only are we opposed to the plan to expand operation in Gaza. But the German government, which has supported Israel for almost 2 years and supplied arms to Israel and sold military equipment and everything, which has been as a counter to many of the things that have been happening elsewhere in Europe, all of a sudden now the German government said, we're going to stop all of that because we are so opposed to this plan to expand in Gaza, except that the rest of Germany and members of the coalition within the German government said, oh, no, you don't. We don't like this at all. And we're not going to allow you to stop selling arms to Israel. Now, it's interesting that the German chancellor came out saying the reason that he made the announcement that he was opposed to this plan was because of rising tension and pressure from within German society about how they view what's going on. Of course, many, many other countries have come out very much opposed to this Gaza plan. But then let's just remember that this is not going to be the first thing that Israel has done over the last 2 years, where there's been massive opposition from around the world. And yet when it was done and dusted, everybody agrees that it was the right thing to do. Who knows?
Who knows indeed, Anthony Reich. That is where we do need to leave it. It is 8 o'clock. I'd love your thoughts on the plan, on this 5-point plan. Do you think that this brings clarity? Do you think it's too little, too late? Do you think that it is a problem? 0618951019. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.